God himself, the Lamb.
Let's begin by reading from Genesis chapter 20, verses 1 through 3. Genesis chapter 20, verses 1 through 3. And Abraham journeyed from there to the south, and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and stayed in Gerar. Now Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." Sometimes we learn lessons far too late. One of the amazing elements of the Bible, of the Bible's narratives about its greatest heroes, is that it does not shy away from highlighting their faults, their flaws, and their sins. Way back in Genesis 13, Abraham lied about his marital status to Sarah when they went to Egypt. And here we see almost the exact same scenario playing out again, with Abraham still making the same old mistakes. Let's learn more about it in today's lesson.
God will provide himself a lamb, the only sacrifice that sin demands, just as he proved to Abraham he would provide himself a lamb. Behold the Lamb, God himself the Lamb.
In Genesis chapter 20, Abraham travels to Gerar. Now, Gerar was the ancient land of the Philistines, southwest of the place where Abraham had been residing for a number of years. When he goes into this new territory, he encounters a man who's identified as Abimelech. Abimelech was probably a title, like Pharaoh, denoting who the ruler of this clan of people was. This is indicated in the fact that a generation later, Isaac encounters another Abimelech. It's unlikely it was the same man, but rather his son or some person who inherited his throne. When Abraham goes to this area, he apparently has the same old concern he had years ago when he went to Egypt with his wife. That is, that someone would try to marry her. So instead of claiming her as his wife, he claims her as his sister. Now, I don't really understand Abraham's thought process. The lie which he told was unnecessary, because we learn that Abimelech had higher moral standards, apparently, than Abraham did on this issue. But we also learn that his lie didn't accomplish anything. It didn't accomplish anything with Pharaoh. Pharaoh still took Sarai to be his wife. And it doesn't accomplish anything with Abimelech, because Abimelech still takes Sarah to be his wife. God comes to Abimelech in a dream that night and warns him that he had taken another man's wife. Now, Abimelech, rightly so, declares his innocence before the Lord. He didn't know anything about it. God gives this reply in Genesis 20, verses 6 and 7. And God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." In this amazing account, this heathen king tells the Lord, "I'm innocent." And God says, "Yes, you are." And in the following verses, verses 8 through 10, something even more remarkable happens when Abimelech rebukes Abraham. Now, I want you to think about when Moses wrote the book of Genesis. He's writing to Abraham's offspring hundreds of years after Abraham lived and died. And he's trying to establish, at least in part, part of the reason for writing the book of Genesis, is the heritage, the ancestry of his people. He's noting the continuity that Moses was called at the burning bush by the same God Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had served. And so when he writes about Father Abraham, he notes several times how Abraham acted less righteously than heathens who lived in the land contemporaneously to him. Remarkable. Abimelech rebukes Abraham. Now, Abraham tried to justify himself. In verse 11, he said he did it because he was afraid, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. In verse 12, he said, well, the statement I made is half true. She is technically my half-sister, but of course a half-truth is a whole lie. Verse 12, indeed, she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And then in verse 13, he tries to blame the whole scheme on Sarah. He says it's because of her. I said to her, this is your kindness that you should do for me, and every place wherever we go, say of me, he is my brother. So I told her to do it. She was in on it the whole time. Now this lie, as is the case with all deception, damaged Abraham's character. It damaged his ability to proclaim the God of heaven and earth to the people of Gerar, and it nearly lost him his wife. So Abimelech decided to pay off Abraham to get him to leave his people alone, although he permitted the patriarch to remain in his territory, verses 14 and 15, and he rebuked Sarah and snidely referred to her, I love this, referred to Abraham rather as your brother, in verse 16. If it was modern day sarcasm, he might have said, your brother, and left it at that. Abraham prayed that no harm would come to Abimelech's household, and the Lord responded positively with blessings, verses 17 and 18. And then the beginning of chapter 21 shifts focus for a little while. We come away from what happened between Abraham and Abimelech and zoom in on the fulfillment of one of the most important promises God ever made to the man Abraham. But Abimelech reappears at the end of chapter 21, and so we'll include that in today's lesson. Look at verses 22 through 24. And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my posterity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me and to the land in which you have dwelt. And Abraham said, I will swear. So Abimelech and his commander reemerge. They reappear. They come to Abraham and they basically say, we know that God is blessing you. You've got this abundant household. You're doing really well. We are confident God is with you. We would like to enter into a covenant treaty with you. Let's make a deal to be allies and not to kill each other in some future land dispute. In verses 17 and 18, verses 25 and 26, they have a little bit of dispute about a well of water, and then the two men formalized a covenant treaty between them. Dr. James Smith says this, quote, Abraham provided sheep and oxen to be slain to cut the covenant in the manner illustrated in Genesis 15. Since the ratification ceremony took place on his territory, Abraham was obligated to provide the necessary animals. He also gave to the king, as a special gift, 7 ewe lambs. These lambs apparently were given so as to guarantee Abraham's sole right to the well, which had been in dispute. As a result of this new arrangement with Abimelech, Abraham was able to sojourn many days in the land of the Philistines, verses 27 through 30. And now we'll read the conclusion of the chapter, verses 31 through 34. Therefore, he called that place Beersheba, because the two of them swore an oath there. Thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. So Abimelech rose with Phicol, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines many days. One of the interesting elements in following through the lifespan and narrative of Abraham is to trace where he dug wells, where he planted trees, and where he built altars. Abraham dotted the land with sacred sites that worshiped God, remembered God, and honored the covenant that the Lord made with him. He recognized that this peace treaty between himself and a powerful regional ruler was just more evidence that God was keeping him safe, God was keeping him sound, and God was blessing him abundantly. He builds this tree, or plants this tree, and builds this site up, a site that would become significant later in biblical history to honor God. What a wonderful example for us. What is it that we leave behind that honors the Lord? What is it that we leave behind that recognizes how we have trusted God and seen how He has blessed us throughout our lives? Sometimes you hear preachers talk about the legacy that we'll leave behind one day when we're dead and gone. And Abraham certainly was concerned about his legacy. He wanted all the inhabitants of the land, not just his descendants, to know he served the Lord and gave everything to Him. We need to do the same, to honor God with all that we are and to memorialize the good things God has done for us.
Although Abraham could not understand how God in His great love could ask him for the only son he had, yet when it seemed to him all hope was dim, his faith, this promise.